What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast digging out his big coat as the big freeze bites. Coming up, Baggy's boinging, Manning making a mark, Bolton's magnificent seven dwarfing Exeter, and Pompey and Stags lose. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. Well, it's a bit of a miserable Monday out there, listener. Hopefully the sun shone on your team this weekend. We're here again to run the rule over everything Football League related. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams. I am joined by the former Arsenal, Stevenage, Carlisle, Southend. Who am I missing, Adrian Clark?
You're missing three games for Rotherham. There you go. Remember me. They wouldn't even remember me. It's fine.
Yeah. Got Carlisle in there. That's all right. All right. So Adrian's with us. We've also
Heater Gile, by the way. Heater Gile is getting his first run out this midweek. I bought one for the first time, and I hope it's good. I'm a little bit worried it's not going to be sold as sort of, you know, not going to be as good as they make it out to be. But fingers crossed.
Sounds like a gimmick. Sam Parkin, have you got one?
I haven't. My memory's a bit hazy because I was just nodding off, but I think it was getting pelters in the Style magazine in the Times this week, any form of heated over garment. So, Clarky, take offence with them, yeah.
What, they're just a waste of money?
You know when you have like, yeah, five up, five down or whatever the terminology would be in the Style magazine in comparison to 4-4-2, which I've probably gone for there. Yeah, they've given it some pelters, unfortunately. I saw someone with some kind of heated device for their feet last season on a gantry. Yeah, some kind of heated pad or something like that, which is always the problem for me, which I've tended to go for cereal packets in the last season or two. Just fold them up nicely in your bag and then there you go.
Yeah, just got to get some separation between the cold concrete and your feet, listener.
Yes.
That is key, apparently. Right, we're going to get into some more hard-hitting football analysis. Before we do, though, how about this? The guys at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of the pod. It's 18+. And remember, always gamble responsibly. Well, seeing as I have swerved having to name all of Sam's former clubs, I can just link us quickly into the Championship review. Oh, look, and here's one we're going to start with. West Bromwich Albion 2, Ipswich 0. We previewed this one on last week's pod. Ipswich going to the Hawthorns, level on points with leaders Leicester, hoping to take advantage of the Foxes' recent faltering. But West Brom had other ideas.
Thomas Asante plays it through, and it's on the post and in from Brady Diagana. In a flash from one end of the pitch to the other.
So a goal at the start of each half did the damage here then, Clarky. Darnell Furlong and Grady Diangana. Interesting what angle you're going to take here. Are you going to talk about Ipswich and the fact that their 12-game unbeaten run is over, or are we going to carry on the praise that we had for West Brom last week and them getting back into the playoffs is probably the lead story here, right?
I think so, yeah. I think that they are pound for pound doing superbly this season because we know that they haven't really got any money. The manager's working with what he's got, and I think he's doing a terrific job. I really do. He's got them defensively really solid. I think this was a mature performance. Did ever so well to tame an Ipswich team that have scored so many goals this season. They barely got a sniff in this game.
Didn't have a shot on target, did they?
No, exactly. So, I mean, who'd you put that down to? I think it is collective effort, but the centre halves are definitely developing a very, very good partnership. And yeah, Carl Bartley and Cedric Kiepre, outstanding as a duo this season. I mean, both have had some very up and down seasons, haven't they, in recent times. That, you know, we've probably all looked at them individually at one point or another and thought, oh, I'm not sure they're really, really up to it. Not playing for a top club like West Brom in the Championship. Well, it's working. And I think in front of them, the Yokoslu-Mowat combination is good. They just look a solid 11, don't they, at the moment. The issue, of course, is depth. Need those players back off the treatment table quickly. But yeah, this was great. I mean, goal from a corner, you know, near post goal, they're great at those. And then the other one from a counter-attack. And it was a brilliant counter-attack as well. Love the way that Jed Wallace received it on the half turn and then just travelled right down the spine of the pitch. And it was finished off in the end, wasn't it, by Dean Garner. So, yeah, fabulous from West Brom. Ipswich just got to take it on the chin. It was just one of those off days.
Yeah, it's a first away defeat for them in the league, Sam, since January of this year. Mentioned they didn't have a shot on target, but this is the Championship, right? These things are going to happen. There's no need for us to conflate this into something bigger than it really needs to be.
No, absolutely not. They've had an incredible season. I think they'll obviously be disappointed with this display, this result. Probably make the supporters feel that a couple of additions are maybe necessary in January if they're going to maintain this. I think in the forward positions, maybe the depth there, when you're thinking Ladapo and Jackson are still coming on trying to affect the game in this type of situation, I think they'd want to go into the market there. Certainly, looked at the numbers of Hurst at the weekend, 16 touches, the fewest far and away out of the two teams in terms of the outfield players, and I think that just encapsulates how good Bartley and Kipre are playing at the moment this season. And I think about the profile of Hurst, the type of player I was as well. Hurst probably a bit better on the shoulder than I was, but you didn't relish those games up against two really physical guys, and I think they're at the top of their game right now. So I think Clarke was right to point those two out, and I think in the wide positions as well, they've got lads who want to help out and get back into their shape. And I think we saw in the Premier League this weekend some wide players maybe don't have the direction to do that, but don't have the want to do that. And I think in Phillips and Wallace in particular, they'll get back in and keep their shape and make it difficult for the opponent. And Ipswich, we know, are brilliant with the ball. They're going to probe, but there was no way through. And I think the first goal helps in that regard. They can sit in then, and no surprise that they got a counter-attacking goal. So yeah, poor defensively from Ipswich from the set piece. Second one a little bit disjointed, got countered on. But West Brom, as Clarkey spoke of in the wake of this game, sorry, before this game, the plan was going to be, you know, spot on from Carlos Corberan. And I think it was. And they'll do that to a lot of teams, especially at the Hawthorns.
What about that miss from Matt Phillips? That was a cracker, wasn't it? Well, can you call it a miss, or was it just simply a clearance? It was astonishing, wasn't it?
It was pretty impressive. Big for West Brom as well to get John Swift and Josh Madger back off the bench. Adrian mentioned the treatment table. Looks like that's clearing up a little bit. They could be big players for them going forward this season. Big weekend for Liam Manning, picking up his first win as Bristol City boss. His Robin side beat Middlesbrough by 3-2. They were 2-0 up before Borough scored twice in 2 minutes at the start of the second half. The purist in me, Sam, enjoyed the Taylor Gardner-Hickman goal the most this weekend, but the banterist in me thought that Zach Viner's own goal was even more satisfying.
Yeah, it's funny, wasn't it? Good strike from Crooks that hit the bar, and then
It's the fact that he's got his head in his hands as soon as the ball's left.
Is he trying to cushion it?
He's trying to cushion it back to the goalie, right?
Yeah, but he must be. Yeah, because the trajectory of the header would suggest that he's trying to head it back to the keeper rather than head it out, I would presume. So, yeah, keeper just wasn't up, was he? Unfortunately, he was lying on the deck. I loved the first goal. Little bit disappointed we didn't get that real pinball effect off the crossbar. It almost slowed it down, didn't it? But he still got a little bit of bounce, which is beautiful. Great goal. I think probably one of the moves, certainly in the first half, where they were, I wouldn't say knocking on the door, but in the ascendancy, showed the kind of pattern of play. I thought that Pring had the license up the left-hand side. They built in a back three quite often. He gets forward, and the little movement of Bell just took a defender or two away and allowed that space to appear. So I think there were some examples of what Liam Manning's going to try and do. They're going to want to have the ball. I saw a lot of kind of conversation about the opening half an hour. I had a little look at it, and they had loads of the ball in the opening 30 minutes, 55%. That kind of flip-flopped in the second half when Borough in the ascendancy. But, you know, really possession heavy to begin with, not, you know, going forward at pace. So I think it was a little bit frustrating for some of the natives inside Ashton Gate, but you can't really argue with 3 goals. There was 3 goals in the previous 6 games for them. So they've equaled that tally in 190 minutes, got the point at QPR. It's been a brilliant start. Alarmingly, I looked at Middlesbrough covering them tomorrow night against Preston. They've only scored 5 and conceded 14 in the opening half, which is one of the worst records in the division. They have taken 5 points from conceding the first goal, but only Sheffield Wednesday, Rotherham and QPR, the three worst teams in the division, have got a worse record than that at the moment. So they're perennial slow starters. Their away record in terms of scoring is incredible in comparison to the home game. So there's something going on there. I think obviously the games away from home are a lot more open, and defensively, they're clearly not up to it right now. So they have been hindered by injuries, but that, I think, is the Achilles heel that Michael Carrick needs to try and repair, I think, moving forward.
Right, Adrian, I've got a simple question for you. Simple for me to ask, difficult for you to answer, I think. So there's a point between these two teams, 11th and 12th respectively. As of now, nearly December 2023, who do you think is going to finish higher? Who has a better chance of making the playoffs out of Bristol City and Middlesbrough?
Middlesbrough. Yeah, Middlesbrough have got a better squad, in my opinion. Probably, you know, Sam's just touched on it there, that, you know, they've got goal threat home and away. And deeper squad. I just think, yeah, Liam Manning, he's going to take a while for the players to get all his ideas on board. They'll be fine. I would imagine they'll end up somewhere around the middle, and that I would expect Middlesbrough to be close to the playoffs, if not in there, probably just outside it this year. I think Middlesbrough, it wasn't long ago, they were on an unbelievable winning run. So I don't think we should start to write them off. I rate both coaches, actually. I think Carrick and Manning are good. One little point that I found really interesting was that Liam Manning went on Thursday with sort of head of operations to the ground because he wanted to do a recce and understand the flow of the stadium on a match day. Basically, because he wants to go and look at the computers before he goes and speaks to his players. So he's working out the route from the technical area into a room where he can look at the, you know, speak to the analysts and go through some clips before he then goes into the dressing room to meet the players. I mean, things are very different these days from when I played, that is for sure, because there's none of that nonsense going on. But I'm all for it as someone that's big on the old analysis these days.
Good luck to him. It's a good start. It's such an untapped potential at Bristol City, isn't it? We've been saying that for years and years, but it'll click for somebody one day. Maybe it'll be Manning. Elsewhere, the drama came deep into added time at Deepdale, where Cardiff made off with the points against Preston. They scored twice in stoppage time to turn a 1-0 deficit into a 2-1 win. Ike Ogbo's winner came in the 9th minute of stoppage time after Carlin Grant had equalised on 90+6. This against the North End side, who'd had Robbie Brady sent off 7 minutes after the restart. Adrian, we've touched on it a few times. I kind of danced around it, but goodness me, those Bluebirds, they're really flying up to 7th.
I know. And I'm going to go to the Cardiff West Brom game, so kind of going to get to see two informed teams, which is going to be quite nice. Yeah, I've been sort of banging the drum for Cardiff for a while now. You know, they score a lot of goals. They're much better than they were. Obviously, set pieces are still very, very important to them, but I think the mentality of the team has changed. In my opinion, Cardiff have been quite a dull team, quite a defence-first kind of operation for a number of seasons now. But Errol Bulut seems to be really, really positive. And I mean, they had 19 shots in this game to Preston's 4. And they never gave up. They got the equaliser, obviously, in the injury time. And then they thought, no, let's push. Let's go for that second one. And I love that mentality. They've now got 11 set-piece goals, which is more than anyone else. And what's interesting about it is that those 11 goals come from an expected goals tally of 4. So they're converting some really difficult headers and whatnot. They're really maximising that avenue. So, yeah, terrific result. I think it probably was deserved, even though they benefited from Robbie Brady's red card. The goalie is an issue for me. He changed the goalie for this game, Bulut, which is a bit odd. Jack Anik came out and Runason came in, who I think still belongs to Arsenal. I'm not entirely sure. I think he's still on loan from Arsenal.
He's gone permanently, just so you do what you should do here, Clarkin. Absolutely lambast this geezer for this mistake. Go on.
Well, I mean, Osmajic has robbed the guy on the halfway line, right? And he surged through. But Runason does not have a Scooby where he is, does he, Sam? I can say, you know what I'm going to say. I mean,
I'd have written down. There was two this weekend, and we're going to come on to another one later.
He basically stands outside the post and says, go on, roll it in the goal. I mean, he got himself into an absolute pickle. And yeah, look, maybe there must be some people out there that have seen Runason have good games, but I just haven't seen it. I just haven't seen it so far.
I love that. I'm just looking at his history, and he left Dijon. Obviously, they didn't think he could cut the mustard. So, yeah, sorry. Cardiff, Sam, what do you think? Are they going to stick around? Ike Ugbo is an interesting one, isn't he? You and I watched him come through the Chelsea Academy. He's had plenty of loans. He's never really found a permanent home. He's on loan from Troyes in Ligue 1. This is what, his first goal since August? Do you think he can be a serviceable championship level striker?
I'm not sure about that. I mean, he started brilliantly, didn't he? He got 3 and 4. That's his first goal since 26th of August. So he's really dried up to a degree.
Hasn't played 90 in that time, in fairness to him.
He hasn't played 90?
No, not since. No. I mean, he hasn't for Cardiff ever. But
I like their forward players. I think the 11's really good, actually. When you look at the 11, they've added steel in midfield. Yeah, I think it's a really good 11. I'd be a bit concerned about the depth. I think we've always been quite enthused and excited about the front players, you know, really good championship front players, you know, probably ones that are, you know, excellent at this level, probably wouldn't be quite good if they were to make the transition at some point into the Premier League. But yeah, they got some talent there. No surprise, really. I mean, Clarkey's encapsulated it really and described it, you know, if a team is hanging in and deep and giving up the ball and with 10 men, Cardiff are a tough proposition because they're so good aerially and obviously score a lot of set pieces, and no surprise that both of their goals were quite untidy, came from balls into the box. So they're really good in that regard. Brilliant win. And I think Clarkey said that he fancied them a few weeks ago to maybe stick around for maybe the entirety. So, you know, it's a large portion of the season gone. So I'd still find it a little bit of a surprise if they were to make it, but they're making a good fist of it at the moment. For Preston, I mean, sometimes I'm a little bit against going here, but just sometimes I don't find the websites that reliable. But Preston, 22nd for overall XG4, I think, 15.8, that's their overall, and they've scored 24 goals. So they have been, it would seem, ridiculously clinical and running a little bit hot in front of goal. So 4 shots at home, you know, despite having to play, what, half an hour, whatever it was, with 10 men after Brady got sent off, they're not creating loads. And I thought it was interesting that he went with Os Majic and Ched Evans, obviously two very similar type players, I would suggest. And they didn't get balls into the box, didn't create much for them. So I'll be intrigued to see which way he goes on Tuesday night. But they've got Jakobsen and they've got Frogier Jensen, who was doing pretty well for the early part of the season, to come back in. So they should improve, but it's just still not that Ryan Lowe kind of attacking approach that I anticipated to eventually develop at Deepdale. Whether it will still happen, we'll have to wait and see. But at the moment, I think it's still a team that's pretty solid based on a good defence, which surprises me given his track record.
Just a quick one on Errol Bullitt again. Maybe he found the right blueprint to play against 10 men here, because Brady gets sent off, was it around 53, 55 minutes, something like that. Between then and about 75 minutes, he brings on 5 subs. So you think about 10 men, tired, doing a lot of running. They're up against practically a half a team, because they're all five of the 10 outfielders are fresh. So that, to me, was quite a savvy move. And I'm a little bit surprised thinking about it that more managers don't do that when up against 10 men. Just load it all on, you know, get them all on there and say, just give these tiring boys the runaround. And I think that's what Cardiff did.
Yep, really good win for them. It is just a swift 13-hour round trip from Sunderland to Plymouth. Well done. Commiserations if you're a Macam listening who made the trip. A 2-0 win for the Pilgrims against Sunderland. It would have given plenty of time for reflection, or if you like, Sam, reading a broadsheet on the coach journey home. Plymouth's brilliance, Adrian, at home. That's probably what's going to keep them upright, because all of their 5 wins have come at home park. They haven't picked up one away at the moment. I mean, it's either Plymouth's brilliance or Morgan Whittaker's brilliance.
Yeah, look, Morgan Whittaker has scored 5 goals now from outside the box this season. The only player in English football with more left-footed goals than him is Erling Haaland. This kid is on fire at the moment. See, Swansea couldn't get him in their team. Derby, let him go. He's in the process of proving those two clubs badly wrong, isn't he, Morgan Whittaker? To me, talent-wise, he looks like someone that can go up again, someone that could potentially go and play in the top flight. He's still young enough, isn't he, to get an opportunity to do that. So, yeah, he's got real quality. What a goal it was. I mean, it was an absolute scorcher, wasn't it? So, fantastic from him. And the other goal was really nice from Kundal, the pass into Finazaz and, you know, two other young players. Beautiful little feet and finish from them. So, yeah, I think the story of this game is just good young players on both teams. Yeah, the average age, I don't know what it was, but it probably was like 23 or something like that. But both are blessed with a lot of talent. And that's probably why, you know, they are perceived, I guess, as teams that can beat anyone on their day, but they're inconsistent. And that, you know, that's synonymous with having a lot of young players in the starting 11. So, yeah, I think the future's bright for Plymouth and Sunderland, actually. But yeah, Plymouth, this was their day.
Sam, you mentioned XG and Preston maybe overperforming theirs. Wasn't the case for Sunderland here, was it? They had 24 shots, hit the woodwork in either half. There's not much Tony Mowbray can do about that other than rue, I suppose.
No, it's... I don't know what it's a product of. Not having clinical enough strikers, maybe. Same old story for them in some of the games, in the recent games, maybe, away from the stadium alike, where they're having a little bit of a malaise after scoring quite freely early part of the season. I think Roberts is having a bit of a dip. Bellingham has played a lot of football. We didn't maybe anticipate him doing as much. It sounds like after the changes at half-time, they were better in the second period. Adil Ashishi, I think is probably his name, sounds to be that he was the pick of the bunch and scored against Birmingham in the most recent home game. So he's kind of knocking on the door for a start. But it seems like we're always talking about that lack of goals from that out-and-out front player. And I think that was evident again here. But yeah, really good win for, you know, I don't think you can be too hard on Sunderland. I mean, they're still well-positioned, aren't they, in ninth after a brilliant campaign last time out. So they'll still have a chance. They've obviously gone about it a different way in terms of the signing of some younger players from the continent in the summer, and they're probably still adjusting some of them. So they'll probably grow into the season and could come strong second half. I just think Plymouth, the six games they had over the last month were hellish. West Brom, Ipswich, Middlesbrough, Leeds, Sheffield Wednesday, Sunderland. I mean, it's been an incredibly difficult run. They've only lost twice and by the odd goal. Ipswich and Leeds. So they've won the home games that you anticipated them winning and have taken points off West Brom and Middlesbrough. To still have that cushion after such a tricky month is credit to Stephen Schumacher, and probably just backs up my sentiment that they'll be fine this season if they can come through that. And now, next half a dozen, I think it's Leicester away they've got in the next six, and then no teams above 14th. So it becomes, you know, a lot rosier for them, the picture looking forward.
Good stuff. What else in the Championship, Adrian, stood out to you this weekend?
A couple of things. How exciting is this young Blackburn side? I just want to praise them, really. I think that John Dow Thomason is doing a really, really good job. Lots of talented players. Moran was at the heart of this one, but you got the Whartons in there. You've got a number of really, really good young players, and they wiped the floor with Stoke. I mean, I paused it at the final whistle because I thought, how many are actually still left in the Bet 365? I reckon 3,000 were left in. Maybe four tops. That, you know, to send that many home fans away early doors is quite some achievement from the young Blackburn side. So well done to them. Lewis Travis, though, afterwards did say on our day, we're a top three side in the Championship. Not having that. Like, they're good, but they're not. I don't think they're top three level personally.
Also, it doesn't work as a metric when the top two go up and not the top three.
No, it was a random one,
wasn't
it?
I'm afraid.
I don't know what he was thinking. And the other one, that it just really annoyed me. Well, there's two things about the Leicester game, Leicester against Watford. Why aren't Watford in gold and black at Leicester? I mean, just why not? It's silly. But then, yeah, just seeing Vardy punching himself after missing that open goal, I thought was quite funny.
Yeah, he's got some issues. Sam, I guess we ought to have a quick word on Wayne Rooney winning a game as Birmingham manager. I mean, it was against Sheffield Wednesday, so a bit of a caveat there, but important that he eventually got up and running. And who knows, maybe this is the catalyst for him and Birmingham.
Yeah, possibly. I think going into the game, I thought like a performance and a result was important. I don't always say that, but I don't think they probably got both. They got the win. I think it probably papered over a few large cracks that we know at St Andrews at the moment, but something to build on. you know, the fans will be pleased that they've arrested that slide and that difficult run they've been on. I mean, they've got some exciting players. Needs to get Dembele playing again. Stansfield's certainly been at it over the period. I think he was involved in the winning goal, wasn't he? He was. It was a lovely cutback, wasn't it, for James, who scored at the second attempt. So yeah, it was a must-win game. I think it probably was. I don't think they're going to be in any haste to change the manager again. I think that would be preposterous, but I think for his own good. And I hope it works out for him. You know, it's no fault of his own. We've said that a few times, that he's got the gig. I like Wayne Rooney. I think, you know, he conducts himself pretty well. And, you know, hopefully this is a start for them. But yeah, pretty desperate for Sheffield Wednesday in a really winnable game.
All right, we're going to head to League One next. Wednesday might join us next season. Right. Speaking of long trips, as we were with Sunderland, at least they slipped to a respectable defeat. Not so Exeter. They went all the way up to Bolton and lost 7-0. Wanderers' biggest ever win at the stadium. More sheet than tough for Exeter, I think, though. The thing that really stands out to me about this one, Clarkey, is that it was only 2-0 at half-time. And that would be my biggest worry if I was Gary Caldwell, because that does not speak to me of a team who are right behind the manager and not wanting to give up the fight. They totally crumbled.
No, they let it slide. And I was fuming myself because I put it up as my best bet on a podcast that I'm on. And I changed it at the last moment. I was going to go Bolton -1 and I changed it to Bolton and under 4 goals. Because Exeter actually haven't been battered very often. They've been really, really good at sort of being involved in games and making them competitive. But they let this one get away from them. But if you watch the highlights, and if anyone hasn't, I'd urge you to. Slick football, really, really smooth. 1-2 touch, combination play, runners in behind, quality of the balls coming into the box from the wings. Just fantastic. Lots of low, hard balls put across the face of goal. It blew Exeter away. You talk about Exeter fans, they didn't see a goal. Well, all they got was one shot. Bolton had 24. So, I mean, it's about as miserable as you get. But yeah, I mean, to put it into perspective, Jack Dempsey came on in the 75th minute and ended up with 4 shots. So that tells you the story of how relentless Bolton were towards the end of the game. So yeah, I saw them early in the season. I was well impressed with them. They were my tip to win the league after I changed my mind on Derby. And I think Bolton are the team to stop. I think I went big on Posh the other week and said they can get top two. And I'm sticking with that. I think Bolton and Peterborough can get top two this season. And this was a performance that outlined that.
Bolton paying or reaping the rewards, maybe, Sam, of sticking with Ian Evatt, because he's been with them since League Two, hasn't he? And he's obviously well entrenched within that club. Are you like Adrian in that you think that they're there for the long term? They're on an incredible run at the moment, aren't they, in all competitions?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, after the transfer business they did last January, I think it was to try and give them a push at the end of the previous campaign. I think they were always going to be strong. Yeah, I think the only way they're going to lose Ian Evatt in the short term is if someone nicks him from a higher level. I'm sure he's in the conversation for a lot of jobs. He's got a clear, concise way of wanting to play. I think it's quite different from a lot of teams. I think they're quite individual. You know, when I've seen them live, they're a bit, don't want to say this now, but you know, when you play the extra pass in the final third, a bit like Arsenal under Wenger, it's a bit like that.
Yeah.
You know, the amount
of
kind of 18-yard box kind of entries are enormous, and they're always kind of looking for that pass rather than taking on a strike from 25, 30 yards. So no, I think he's got something really good going. Great front pairing, strength in depth. What probably helped Bolton at the weekend was that Exeter's front two was Jack Aitchison, who, for my money, is not a centre forward. He's a good forward player, attacking midfield player, and Diabate, the centre half for Exeter, who was playing up front
from the start.
I don't think it was, you know, because of the level of his performance. He was taken off in the second half, but I don't know. I don't know if they're that down in numbers. I mean, there was a forward player on the bench whose name escapes me right now. But I just think when you think of the players that they've lost over the course of the last year, you think about that firepower with Nombe and Giovanni Brown and Ethan Collins, who left, and Sparks they had previously. I mean, Yeah, he was part of that trio, wasn't he? Stansfield, yeah. So they had some brilliant forward players. They had some really good players in that 11, in that squad. So you look at the players at Gary Caldwell's disposal now. I mean, goodness me, who's been in charge of signing the players there? Because they have been weakened and not slightly. I mean, enormously going into this season. So it's a miracle that we're not seeing a corner flag, isn't it, really, this morning? But I suppose, again, that, like I said on the preview podcast that we did last week, it probably just emphasises how different Exeter is in terms of the way that it's run. Mm. They're not going to make hasty decisions. I mean, this wouldn't be the hasty decision after they conceded 7, but you catch my drift. They're probably going to back him and hope that he turns it around in the next few weeks.
Yeah, I did just refresh the Exeter Twitter feed while we were talking. I can't lie, but as it stands, he is still in charge. I did say that was Bolton's biggest ever win at that stadium. I meant in the league, of course, because it was only earlier this season that they beat Man United 8-1 in the whatever the Football League Trophy is called. Bristol Street Motors, that's the one. Exeter back in action as full midweek programme. Exeter,
by the way,
to Shrewsbury.
Exeter lost 9-0, I think, to Reading, by the way, this season in the
Bristol Street
Trophy,
Motors, yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
So it's not the first time.
No. Take that centre-half from up front and put him back to the day job, I would suggest, would be the thing to do there. let's roll on. Portsmouth's unbeaten start to the League One season came to a screeching halt. They were gubbed 4-0 by Blackpool at Fratton Park. Another long trip there. More successful for the Tangerines, though. They arrived with plenty of zest. Here's Neil Critchley.
No, yeah, very pleasing. It's been a really satisfying day. To come to a team that's in form, unbeaten, playing at home, to come and score 4 goals and keep a clean sheet, see the supporters celebrating at the end, travelled many miles to get here and made up for them. So, you know, that one's for them today. It was a great result, great performance. And we have to go and, you know, build on that now. We've got to back that up on Tuesday night against Northampton.
Who do you want to talk about here then, Sam? Pompey, I guess, even though the other team won 4-0, Pompey hadn't lost in the league all season, so maybe they're the story.
Yeah, but I think, you know, considering it's been 27 games or whatever, you sometimes have just got to be accepting of that as a player, as a manager, as a supporter. Not the scoreline, but it was going to happen at some point, wasn't it? And Blackpool are a really good side. You know, I saw them a few weeks ago. Got some great attacking players, and I thought Dembele, CJ Hamilton's having a bit of a renaissance as well, but he's been a really good attacking player for a number of years, for a number of teams. So they've got really good players, and they were bold in this game. They went after Portsmouth, and not every team's going to do that. You know, when you're playing against the better sides, especially away from home, you know, I've been on an opposition team at Fratton Park. Difficult to play when those fans are up. It's tight pitch, but Blackpool didn't sit in. They went and got in the faces of Portsmouth centre-halves when they tried to play out. And that was a little bit problematic, forced them a little bit long at times. The goal was obviously came at a really good time for them. The opening goal, that is. The second one looked offside, but I've seen a still and it's not. Beasley deflects in Dembele's attempted strike. So I think that one was okay. I think there was a contentious penalty shout that didn't go Portsmouth's way. And obviously you could maybe argue a little bit about one of the yellows, I think. And that obviously had a bit of a bearing on the game, Morel's red card. But no doubt that Blackpool were the better side here. The game plan was good. They carried it out well. And they, for my money, are probably going to be in the mix. I would say Blackpool, having done it before Neil Critchley at that club, having some of the same players. I think Dougal remains a massive player for him, and he was big in this game. You know, they shouldn't be ruled out. And Portsmouth are just dusting themselves down after obviously losing Regan Paul, I think, for the season. Andrewin's going to be out for 3 months, I believe, as well. So they've got some problems. I think 4 or 5, you know, potential starters not available at the moment. And you know, I've said it so often, that's going to hinder any side. And I think they're just obviously just reeling a little bit from that at the moment. But, you know, 2 games this week away from home, very winnable. They're a good side. They're going to be, you know, jostling for those top 2 spots. And I'm sure they'll bounce back in the games ahead.
Blackpool also got a decent run by the looks of it, Adrian. Northampton, Carlisle and Cambridge, next 3. Only outside the playoff places on goal difference at the moment. So they might be well placed to make a run second half of the season, as Sam's suggesting.
Yeah, I could see them. I could see this being a playoff final, potentially. I think Portsmouth, even though they've been on this amazing unbeaten run, still not sure about them, but for top two, just the volume of goals that they don't score, I think is an issue. It puts them under pressure. Do you know what? I think that game plan that Sam was talking about getting in their faces and being on the front foot, is something that can work against teams like Portsmouth, who are very good at sort of grinding out the narrow home wins. If you can force them to need to score two or three goals to win a game, that's going to be a problem. So, yeah, I think others might be a little bit bolder against Portsmouth moving forwards. But, yeah, CJ Hamilton as a wing back in a 3-5-2 has been very, very effective, hasn't he, this season? So, yeah, good team. Very good team.
Anything else, Adrian, in League One that we ought to know about?
Well, it wasn't a good start, was it, for Des Buckingham at Oxford? Didn't really see that one coming. I think that was a nightmare start for him. 2-0, going down 2-0. We had. I wanted to mention Nathaniel Mendes-Lang. I think Derby are on the march, aren't they? Definitely after a really sort of stale start to the season, they were stinking the place out. You know, every other week. Derby County, they've found some consistency, but Mendes-Lang, who's never been that consistent as a player from memory, like he's always been a bit hit and miss, he's been their man. And I do think that someone like him, or him specifically, can be quite unplayable at times with that pace, that power, the ability to score great goals all by himself. I think he's having a terrific season for Derby, and they really, really need to keep him fit. The other one was that classic mix-up, wasn't there, between the Cambridge goalie and the centre-half to give Northampton a goal. It was like, no, you have it, no, you have it. And it's like, ah, right, they've scored.
Neither of us have got it. Sam, before we go to League Two, there are Reading fans screaming at their devices saying, we won an away game in the league for the first time in more than a year. We've spoken about some miserable away trips this season. And at least those Royals who've had a thoroughly rotten time of it for the last year or so had something to celebrate this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Relatively local game for them as well. Bit of a derby there. I think from this game, was it a lot of kind of shushing of the mouth? There seems to be a lot of that going on this weekend.
Lewis Wing played, didn't he, for Reading? I think maybe he was getting a little bit of flack. I don't know.
I think it might have been a few of his teammates that were actually doing the shushing, but I've seen quite a lot of that this weekend, and I did make a note of it. Sam Smith, I enjoyed trying to take that first goal. I've only seen it once, bear in mind, but it was one of many crosses intended for the far post and for a teammate that went all the way through.
Was his just a bad touch? Because that's what I thought. I thought he was trying to control the ball.
Did he definitely touch it? Maybe I'm getting mixed up with another goal, but I thought it possibly went straight in. Maybe it's another goal I'm thinking of. But I did think like he wheeled away very, very positively to suggest that he meant whatever he did do.
Good on him. We'll give him the benefit of the doubt.
Were you a big shusher, Sam, back in the day?
No, not for that. Not for me, that.
You wouldn't shush it?
No.
I prefer a shush to the fingers in the ear, which is the other one at the moment. But out of all of them, I'm more of a, I quite enjoy the player appeals for calm from the supporters after they score. I think that's a nice little wind up of opposition fans more so.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just think like that's just, it's the territory, isn't it? Like you're going to be getting pelters from the away fans, from the home fans. You're going to be getting pelters. You're playing for the other team. Just like enjoy it with your teammates and your supporters would be my take on it.
Can't we all just get along?
Right, I shamefully pointed to the name on the back of the shirt once. I just feel really embarrassed that I ever did that.
I said it before.
I was angry.
Yeah. I like the individual dig out. That was more my bag. You know, if someone's been giving you a little bit of stick and you know, like during a lull during the game, if there's a throw or an injury or something, I just clock the actual person that's giving me the stick, score the goal, and then just run straight to him and do something silly. Yeah.
Give him a big wave. Lovely. Yeah,
maybe pat the tummy, something like that.
All right, that was League One. We're heading to League Two next. So we said on last week's show that Wimbledon needed to improve their home form if they were to challenge for a playoff place. Well, you're welcome for the inspiration, lads. The Dons put four past promotion-chasing Notts County at Plough Lane to earn a 4-2 victory. It left Notts boss Luke Williams less than impressed.
We're lucky to have even been level at any point in the game other than kickoff, because we should have been 6-0 down at half-time, because we play with no intensity. We play like we're terrified to be on the pitch.
Let's start with Wimbledon, though, shall we, Sam? Back-to-back home wins for the first time this season, only a point outside the playoffs, and they've got a game in hand, so all's rosy in the Wombles Garden.
Four wins at home on the spin in all comps.
Mm.
Lovely, jubbly. Yeah, just one point outside the playoffs now. really good performance. Seen quite a few clips doing the rounds on social media after this game, and they made a lot of chances, especially in that first half. Obviously, there was a calamitous, I think, 20 minutes or so start of the second where everyone inside that ground, probably because of the last like year or two, you're fearing the worst, especially playing against a really good side in Notts County, but able to respond, get that second penalty, and then Al Hamady wrapped it up. And yeah, I mean, his performance was exceptional. The centre forward against a team who obviously give you a little bit of a chance with the way they play. They were dispossessed for two of the goals. It's Sam Slocum, the goalkeeper, who's going to get the stick for the second time today. A little bit harshly, not as bad as the Jos Majic one on Runesson earlier in today's show, but he showed Al Hamady so much of the goal for his second one. He made it really easy for him. But yeah, it was a job well done by Johnny Jackson. Saturated the middle of the pitch with a diamond up against, obviously, Notts County, who've got those two tens. And, you know, that proved pivotal, I think, in stopping them, McGoldrick and Crowley, having the impact that they've had throughout the season. So, yeah, changing from the shape they normally go with and stopping Notts County. And when you win the ball in those transitions, you've got to be able to hurt the top teams. And I think with the centre forward, with Tilly, another really good player for the level, Wimbledon can do that, because they've got good forward players and they're good on the counter. So I think it was probably those two things coming together, the disruption of Notts County's flow, but then also having the cut and thrust and the capacity to hurt them. So really good win. I think Notts County probably missed Baldwin, and probably they need to probably reinforce defensively and maybe the goalkeeper as well, if they're gonna continue in the vein that they've shown since the start of the season. But yeah, no shame losing at Wimbledon. They're a good side this year.
And Notts have got these away performances in them, haven't they, Clarkie? What was it, 5 at Sutton on opening day, 5 at Colchester earlier in the season as well? They will chuck one of these in every now and again.
Yeah, I think Sam's right. I think the forward line's tied to winning. The rear guard and the keeper are more mid-table league too. So that's the area they need to strengthen. They will always take risks, but I just think that's the way that they want to play. They want to knock the ball around. So they're always going to be vulnerable to the turnovers. But maybe they need, like Tottenham. You know, Tottenham, you've seen the difference there where, you know, they flood people forward. But unless you've got the pace of Van de Ven and Romero to bail you out, you're in trouble. And I think maybe they need a little bit more of that at the back. Moving forward. But yeah, Sam touched on it there about negating Crowley and McGoldrick. I do think that. I think a little bit like when Premier League teams play City, when Championship teams play Leicester, Notts County are one of those opponents that I think you're entitled to change the way you play. You just have to cope with what they bring to the table. And they did negate them. Crowley didn't have a shot. And McGoldrick had one. And Wimbledon only had 25% of the ball in the game. So County had a lot of it, but their two number 10s did precious little, and that's to do with the game plan and the organisation. So well done. Well done, Wimbledon. Well done, Johnny Jackson.
I think Jake Reeves said it after the game that, you know, Notts County must have to really box clever, because every team in the division is going to come up with a different game plan when they're facing them.
I didn't see that, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And I think he's an ex-Notts player, and he obviously took the two penalties really well. I was just going to say on Luke there, actually, thinking back to, I know we're going to talk about Swindon in a minute, but when he was the Swindon assistant, obviously the style was very, very similar. And just thinking back, you know, to that time, they got to the playoff final where they were thumped by Preston, but they had Nathan Thompson, who used to sit a little bit deeper and loved that role. He would be the one that get it off the goalkeeper. They had Jack Stevens one side and Jordan Turnbull the other. Jordan Turnbull was a bit of a competitor, old-fashioned. Jack Stevens, obviously, really good on the ball. Nice ball playing centre-half. So they had a really nice balance there. But I don't remember them having the scintillating pace. And Swindon were susceptible to giving up goals. So I don't know what the answer is. You know, maybe when you're going down the leagues, when you're playing this style of football, you have to accept that you're going to concede a few. There's not going to be too many that can be beautiful on the ball and run. I don't really know what the answer is, but I think it's something that Notts County are definitely wrestling with at the moment. Maybe having someone like Nathan Thompson helped Swindon, because he was like an old fashioned sweeper, if you like, Nathan, who could sit a little bit deeper and kind of orchestrate the two either side of him.
Yeah, I'll tell you that they need Van Dijk and Saliba, don't they? And it'd be fine. It'd be absolutely fine. Yeah, good on the ball, quick. But you're right. You can't have it all, can you? And I think being good on the ball is actually the number one.
Yeah.
priority for County.
Maybe play fullbacks there, but then you maybe get overpowered at times. So yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? Especially in League Two. But I'm sure Luke Williams will have a plan, you know, because he's not gonna deviate, and they'll be close. They'll be close, whether automatic or via the playoffs.
But wasn't it a great weekend for the East Midlands representatives in League Two? Mansfield Town lost for the first time in the division this season, went down to a late defeat against Swindon at the County Ground. First league defeat of the season, Adrian, for Mansfield. But if we open out that picture a little bit, they've actually lost four of their last six in all competitions. So maybe this had been coming.
Yeah, maybe. But I wouldn't worry too much if I was Nigel Clough. I think, you know, just look at the players that he could bring on and bring off in the game. It's got a very, very good squad there, and they'll win a lot more than they lose. This was unlucky, obviously, right at the end. It was a Sam Parkin special, wasn't it? Off to post, and I don't know. It was almost as scruffy as that goal you pointed out from back in the day, Sam, wasn't it? And the winner from Jake Young, but yeah, they were seconds away from maintaining their unbeaten run. Just yeah, I wouldn't worry too much if I was Mansfield. They're a very good team.
What about Swindon, Sam? This was a big win for your boy Mike Flynn, wasn't it? After the poor form they've had at the County Ground, including that bizarre FA Cup defeat to Aldershot.
Yeah, big win. I think against a team going brilliantly. Obviously, owed some of it to his centre forward again, who's in a rich vein of form once more. 6-5 after that glut of goals at the start of the season for Jake Young, where he got, I think, 9 in his first 6. It was ridiculous. And he's a player. I was going to maybe do a little scouting report on him, but I'm going to keep quiet considering he's Bradford's player. And I'm dearly hoping that he remains at Swindon for the season. He seems to be really enjoying it. I heard him interviewed, my colleague that I was working with interviewed him after the recent defeat at Colchester when he got back scoring, actually. And he's a really likeable lad as well. Yeah, gave a really good interview after that game, really honest. So yeah, I like the cut of his jib, and he's a good player. He's a good player, and probably a big reason for the team selection here is him and Charlie Austin are quite similar. They've been playing quite a lot, but they're both good back to goal. There's not a great deal of mobility between them in terms of players that can run beyond. So he had Dan Kemp in a bit of a free role here and put an extra midfield player in, I noticed from looking at the team. So I think that was probably to counter Mansfield's diamond and cause them a bit of a problem with Kemp, who is a live wire, really kind of free spirit and goes all over, creative force. So just having him playing off Young, I think, was probably pivotal in this game. Although Charlie came on, hit the post with a header and basically caused the start of that almighty scramble that led to the winner. So I think tactically, really good job from Flynn. Still enormously stretched defensively. Harrison Minturn's a young lad who's come through the ranks and was on loan at Chippenham, I think, sometime last year. He's in at the moment and did pretty well in this game, which was, by all accounts, a pretty even encounter. So Clarkie's probably right that. Slightly harsh on Mansfield, but brilliant for Swindon. And Young is going really well. So they'll need to improve the squad in January. And if they can do that, hopefully it's not too late, but you know, it's been a difficult period.
So Mike Flynn kept his job. We do have a couple of new managers in League Two. Grimsby have gone for Dave Artell, got Crewe out of the division, then took them back in there a couple of years later. He said that he turned down other League Two jobs and the offer of being assistant manager at Standard Liège, which is not a sentence I ever thought I'd hear David Artell say, but he's a pretty safe pair of hands, right, Clarkie? He had a long spell at Crewe as well, didn't he? So he can make it work over the long term, hopefully.
Yeah, he did. He sort of came, I think, from the youth setup, but had a really long spell there. And I was interested to read some quotes from him. He spoke to the Coach's Voice, excellent website that sort of talks to a lot of head coaches around. And he said, I was doing the coaching, the recruitment, the scouting, the loan strategies, the transfer strategies, individual development plans. I was doing contract negotiations. He said, I just ran out of gas. I had nothing left to give. And he was very, very grateful, actually, in hindsight, that he got the sack at Crewe, because it just gave him a little bit of chance to reflect and think, right, okay, what sort of manager do I want to be? And yeah, I think it's quite a shrewd appointment. Not a big name manager as such, but he was pretty reliable, wasn't he, at Crewe? And you don't stay in jobs for 5 years unless you've got something about you in the lower league. So yeah, wishing well at Grimsby. Sounds like he's refreshed and ready to go.
Meanwhile, Morecambe appointed Jed Brannan. He was in charge for the 6-0 thumping at Wrexham at the weekend. He's replaced Derek Adams, who up sticks for Ross County last week. The only other League Two note that I've got is Stockport failing to break the record for the longest winning streak in English football's fourth tier, Newport County, ending their 12.
Paul Mullin's hat trick was good, wasn't it? Against
pretty Morecambe. Impressive. Yeah.
He looks.
You were in gold, O'Clarkey, weren't you?
No, you're not having the goalkeeper.
Nah.
This is just the week that we're hammering goalkeepers, isn't it?
Yeah, okay. They weren't great. And what about Barrow? 1-1, wasn't it, after 86 minutes? And they win 4-1 at Colchester. Unbelievable.
Incredible scenes. All right, we are just about done. But of course, I've got a tweet for the chaps to talk about. I brought this one to your attention for a reason, Sam. It's from the Bolton man, Dan Unlunderloo, who says, "It's all about the team and all for the fans. On to the next," white heart emoji. I wonder, therefore, why he's accompanied the text with a picture of just him on his own celebrating. Thought it was all about the team, all for the fans.
Yeah, I don't really know the backstory here, so I'm not going to go in two-footed, unfortunately, Matt. Apologies to you and Adrian here. It's his first goal of the season, so I understand the elation and I understand him feeling the necessity to tweet, but I would have made it all about me in these circumstances because I'd imagine he's probably been getting a little bit of stick. He's obviously not been starting too many games. I think he's only started 2 or 3 in the league, so he's been coming on a lot and obviously not got that elusive goal. So I'm not sure about the all about the team and all for the fans, because it probably is a moment where, do you know what I mean? That is about the individual and the relief that he's probably feeling and maybe shutting up a few.
Do you think, Clarkey, that he's gone the old Victor and each of B, can you put something like, but with the picture? Just I'll write the text. You just pick any old picture and stick that up to his social media manager.
Well, I would have thought, yeah, the modern day player is asking the club photographer to send them the best pics of themselves, aren't they? And he's, yeah. Have you got a pic of me celebrating the goal or whatever? And this is what he's been sent. But yeah, I think it's nice, but it's brown nosy, isn't it? You know, he's brown nosing the manager.
Yes, well, so I'm confused. Like, what? Well, I'm confused as to has he tweeted the exact opposite of how he's feeling?
I mean, it's not all for the fans. You know, the fans would love to hear that, but you know, he's got a contract to play for. It's a bit about you, mate. You know, it's important.
I enjoyed Ido Magoma's reply. Un beau but égalé par une superbe célébration. Upward and keep the faith in the Lord through hard work. The present and future are bright. We shall see about that.
Adrian. Nice goal, by the way. Swept it home. So, you know, the look up the definition of swept it home, and it was Dan Lindelöf's finish.
Yeah.
I'll do that as soon as we finish, but not before Clarkey tells us about our social media.
Please do give us a follow, because it's great for us to share the link to the pod and get it out there to more EFL fans. So, you know, so many more out there that don't know we exist. And I think, you know, there's a lot of people out there that would enjoy it. So at EFL Watler on X Twitter and at What the EFL, very easy to remember, on Instagram and TikTok. So yeah, please get following. It'd be great.
And before we go, a reminder of the offer from our sponsors, QuinnBet. They've enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinnbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of the pod. It's 18+. And remember, always gamble responsibly. All right, that'll do it for this week's show. We'll be back with more same time next week. Until then, enjoy the football. We'll speak to you soon. Bye for now.